And so part of the research you had done a few years ago looked at specifically how self-reliance in women is perceived kind of in the office setting and the potential impact.
When you think about self-reliance and what that means and what that conveys, I always say it sort of conveyed this inability to ask for help, this resistance to others. I'm from Oregon. It's kind of like the man in the woods who doesn't want to talk to anybody else. But that just did not align with the examples and historical examples in my own life of women who I thought of as being highly self-reliant, where in fact it wasn't at all a resistance to community, but it was like a capacity or an agency.
Welcome to The Ripple Effect, the podcast that takes you on a journey through the minds of Wharton faculty. I'm your host, Dan Loney, and in each episode, we'll be diving deep into the inspiration behind the groundbreaking research that Wharton professors have conducted and exploring how their findings resonate with the world today.
Well, how does self-reliance factor into potential career success for a woman? Rebecca Schomburg is an assistant professor of operations, information, and decisions here at the Wharton School. She's taken a deeper dive into this area over the years, and she joins us here in our studio. Nice to meet you. Great to have you with us
today. Nice to meet you, too.
Let's start larger scale, though. Yeah. What's the importance, do you think, of the component of self-reliance in general?
Self-reliance is obviously a trait that I think within the U.S. we talk about a lot. It is a cultural value that, especially as someone from me who's grown up in the Pacific Northwest, kind of the frontier states, it's part of our ethos and our culture. But it is a trait that tends to be associated stereotypically more with men than it is with women. And I think because of that, our understanding of what this trait means and what it conveys, particularly as it is associated with women, is not well understood. And indeed, is like pretty different from how it is often thought about in terms of its association with men.
And so part of the research you had done a few years ago looked at specifically how self-reliance in women is perceived kind of in the office setting and the potential impact.
When you think about self-reliance and what that means and what that conveys, I always say it sort of conveyed this inability to ask for help, this resistance to others. I'm from Oregon. It's kind of like the man in the woods who doesn't want to talk to anybody else. But that just did not align with the examples and historical examples in my own life of women who I thought of as being highly self-reliant, where in fact it wasn't at all a resistance to community, but it was like a capacity or an agency. Something that inspired this work for me was actually my great-grandmother, who immigrated to the U.S. from Ireland, and she had 11 children, and on the way, her husband dies, and ends up in Nebraska.
Oh, wow.
And, like, makes it work through the use of community.
Right.
And I'm like, that is a self-reliant woman. It's like female homesteaders in, like, the early 1900s. Those are self-reliant women. And that's just not captured well in our association, which we think with men is sort of this self-reliance and inability to ask for help. That's not how I thought about self-reliance for myself. It's not about how I thought about self-reliance for the other women in my life. And indeed, it's not how other people appear to perceive self-reliance when it's communicated or associated with women, which is just fundamentally different and means something very different than when it is, for instance, communicated by a man.
So then in terms of the workplace, then there's probably historical patterns in terms of how this idea of self-reliance is thought of in terms of how it's associated with men, and it's probably different in how it's associated with women.
I mean, one is I think we just haven't even thought of what self-reliance means or how the definition of what self-reliance is changes when it's associated with women.
Right.
Indeed, I think historically in the workplace it has been so male-dominated that our understanding of these traits and qualities have often, particularly masculine qualities, have often been associated, or we only see them through that lens of them being attached to sort of male employees,
right,
as opposed to when all of a sudden they're associated and attached to women, female employees, they just may mean something fundamentally different.
Right. So tell us a little bit about the research and what you found out from doing it.
What I did and what I was interested in is how, pretty simply, like if you describe a man as self-reliant and you describe a woman as self-reliant, do those communicate the similar or different things? And so you hold everything constant, which can be challenging, particularly when you're studying something like gender. You take different individuals or different types of leaders or different, you describe different people, and you hold everything constant except, you know, was it a man or a woman? And do you describe them as self-reliant or, for instance, another trait like dominant or just something neutral?
Right.
And what I wanted to know was when you describe self-reliance for a man, does that communicate something different than for women? And indeed, like when you describe a man as highly self-reliant, it communicates more of this inability to connect with others, a lower we call communality, which is connection with other people.
Right.
And that's just not the case for women, where in many ways this self-reliance is orthogonal or independent of any association of communality. So you could say for men, if you describe a man as highly self-reliant, people infer that he's not going to be very social, he's not going to be very warm, he's going to be resistant to working with others. They just don't make that same inference when you describe a woman as self-reliant.
Right. And of course, when you're talking about kind of the business setting, that kind of idea of community, especially
yes.
now in the last several years, it seems like the focus on community and groups and working together is even a much greater focus than we've seen.
Yes. And I think what's interesting about that is normally if you view self-reliance from, I said, kind of this masculine angle or as it associated with men, you would think that it would be in opposition to that, to a sort of a team-oriented environment.
Right.
But when you take what I say, this sort of more feminine perspective on self-reliance, it is actually quite aligned with that environment, or at least not in opposition to it.
Is it surprising that there is kind of that separation of what the perception is for men and women?
On the one hand, yes. I think with traits, you know, like self-reliance, dominance, or even caring or compassion, we associate these traits with different genders. You know, we associate caring and compassion stereotypically more with women. And so when we hear those traits, we often then associate, we have an image of a woman and all the stereotypes that go along with that. But then what happens when we put that trait in association with a man? We assume it means the same thing, but that's an assumption.
Right.
And I think what this work shows, and which I think is a promising other area of inquiry, is that these same traits mean something different when they're associated with different genders. And so we can't assume that the meaning of the word or right. the trait stays the same.
Not that it's something that probably a lot of the C-suite would be thinking about, but there's probably a significant business impact component here that needs to be investigated so that you can truly have a better understanding of how your operation works, the ways to be able to reach the levels of success that you want for all employees across the scope.
What you realize is that if you start to think about the traits and qualities that you would look for in a leader, in a manager, somebody to lead a team, a project leader,
right.
we have to understand what these qualities mean when they're associated with different genders or different types of groups of people. Because if we're saying, well, I don't think I would want somebody who is self-reliant because that seems in opposition to being team-oriented or being a leader, that's just not the case if all of a sudden you're looking for, if you mean that, if you take this more of this other perspective associated with women, how that might mean.
Yeah, because when you say self-reliant, the first thing I thought of is team player. You know, you're not necessarily viewed as a team player because if you're self-reliant, you're able to take care of things on your own and you don't really feel like you need to incorporate other people kind of into the mix or the operation
yeah.
that you're running.
I think that is the dominant perception of what this trait is.
Yeah.
But again, because the dominant perception of this trait comes from an association of this trait with men in general,
yeah.
that we don't know, that we realize that that trait can just mean something different when we associate it with women. And I do think that that is surprising. But it is less surprising when I start to think about its association with other things. Like there's a term in cultural psychology called horizontal individualism, which is a mouthful, but just basically means that like there are views of the self that like you're an independent person, but you're not better or worse than any other person.
Sure.
And in some of my own work, that seems to be more about what self-reliance is conveying for women than it is for men.
So there's probably an element that by understanding this better, you're maybe taking away some of those historical beliefs
yeah.
that will make the overall operation or the overall mindset around employees and workers in the company better in the future.
That's what I would hope. And I think, you know, what's also interesting to me with any research related to gender is we often talk about it through the lens of one gender.
Right.
Right? So I'm talking about this as self-reliance as it relates to women. But I think this work also sheds light on some of the pressures that we talk about self-reliance as it relates to men. For men, that stereotype seems to suggest potentially more of this, like to uphold this value of self-reliance, I'm not supposed to seek help.
Right.
I'm not supposed to work with other people. And the hope would be, could we change the view of what it means to have the capacity to be self-reliant
yeah.
such that it's not in opposition to being able to work well with others.
Even though you did this research a few years ago, with all that we've gone through in the last 4 years with the pandemic and remote work and the change of dynamics in and around the workplace and what we know, I think there's probably some importance to having that understanding even more so now as we kind of move forward in the years ahead.
I think you're right. I think there was kind of an induction of many of us didn't want to be like going to Walden and Thoreau and being by ourselves during all of that time, you know, and I think it's changing some of the benefits of what we found during that time of being able to be be more in control and being more agentic over our own work lives as individuals,
right,
while also still integrating ourselves within an organization. And I think in many ways the pandemic revealed some of that tension between our own individual agency and then needing to integrate with an organization. And in some ways, my own work is just showing that own tension with self-reliance, where like it is both this capacity to be by oneself and to take care of oneself, but that it does not necessitate not being able to work well with others.
Having done the work that you've done up to this point, where do you want to take it? Where's kind of the natural next step in trying to take this next?
So what this revealed to me is often sometimes these traits, they change their meaning and what they convey based on who is possessing that trait. So describing myself as self-reliant could be different from describing my brother as self-reliant. And my guess is that there are other traits like that where we think that they might mean the same thing when we describe, for instance, a man as dominant or a woman as dominant, or if we describe a woman as caring or a man as caring. But once we associate those qualities with a particular gender, the very meaning of the word could shift. And so I think it's important to flesh that out so that when we're talking about who are we seeking as an employee, like what are the qualities that we want in a leader, we have to know what we truly mean rather than just using the word. You know, if I say I'm looking for a self-reliant person, or I'm looking for a dominant person, or I'm looking for a caring person, I am assuming that that means the same thing to you as it does to me. But then if I dig deeper and say, well, what do you mean? Like, okay, well, what does that look like to you? Like, what is that? Can you describe what that person is like? And I think we have to actually describe what the person is like, because what we realize is just sometimes using these shorthands or descriptors, we might not be communicating what we intend to communicate.
What do you think this is meant for you personally, doing this research?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think about sometimes the challenge. I mean, obviously right now, and I think about this in academic research, but also it is, as it aligns with where organizations are interested in, is deeply interested in issues related to diversity and having rigorous empirical evidence one way or the other about how do we study issues of diversity in the workplace. And I think in some ways what this work has revealed to me is just how sometimes challenging that can be, because even if we're trying to say, like, you know, oh, do people judge dominant women differently than dominant men? And that very well might be the case. But if what we mean by dominance changes when we're describing a woman than a man, then it becomes incredibly hard to sometimes study these very things that we care about.
Yeah. I think it's also fun for you to express the connection that it had for you personally with your grandmother, I believe you said it was, to see that experience and what that means, you know, in terms of this research that you're doing.
I think that's where a lot of research comes from, and sometimes the research that that motivates us the most as academics is where when you look into the world and you realize your own experience is not necessarily aligning with the things that you're reading or the things that people are saying.
Yeah.
And then that deep exploration into why is it that your experience might be different from what you're reading or what standard beliefs suggest.
Rebecca, great to meet you. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
You got it. Rebecca Schomburg, who's Assistant Professor of Operations, Information, and Decisions here at the Wharton School.
Thank you for listening to The Ripple Effect. We hope you found this episode informative and engaging. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review so that we can continue to bring you the best insight from the Wharton School.